walked over, leaning back to stare into his face, her smile matching his. Her eyes moved over his shoulder to the clock on the wall, and she startled. "Oh my goodness, I've got to get back to work. I have an appointment in just a few minutes." "No worries," he said. "I'll give you a call and we'll set up our date." Just like the other evening, he leaned over, placed his hand on the curve of her waist, and kissed her forehead. Turning, he walked out of the conference room and back through the lobby. Just as he reached the front door, it opened, and, to his surprise, he looked up to see the mayor. With a nod of his head, he greeted, "Mayor Banks." Corwin blinked, visibly surprised to see him there, but his eyes dropped down to the plastic bag in his hands, and he came to his own conclusions.
"I see your brother has got you making deliveries now."
Refusing to be irritated by Corwin's misplaced sense of humor, he quipped,
"When you're the co-owner of a business, as I am, I can pretty much do whatever I like, especially bringing lunch to a very nice lady."
Glancing over his shoulder, he called out a goodbye to Mrs. Markham and headed out into the sunshine. Walking back to the pub, he could not help but wonder what brought the mayor to Leah's doorstep. Leah was still shocked by Aiden's invitation to dinner and barely had a chance to celebrate before Mrs. Markham walked Corwin into her office. Standing, she greeted the mayor and invited him to sit.
"Mayor Banks, it's nice to see you again. Has the town council come to a decision as to what they would like me to do?"
For a quick moment, irritation flashed across his face before being replaced with a sigh of resignation.
"Yes, Amelia," he began. "I brought the results of the audit to the town council, and they are concerned. The vote was unanimous that they want the financial discrepancies to be found. I am reticent to bring this to the public, but know that if someone from the inside is stealing from us, we must know who."
She remembered his announcement at the music festival that he was running for re-election, and could only imagine that an opponent would use the publicity of mismanagement of town money against him. "In case the town council made that decision, I have already created a proposal based on forensic accounting procedures and what would need to be done. A timeline, which I must warn you will not be short, for me to be thorough, and my fees are attached." She pulled out a file from her desk drawer and handed it to him. "I would suggest you call another meeting of the town council and have them look over my proposal. I will be available for any questions they might have." With a curt nod, he stood and extended his hand.
"I thank you in advance for your professionalism, and also ask for your continued discretion. I will call an emergency meeting of the town council, but I can assure you that we will be accepting your offer. I will call you within 2 days to let you know of the decision."
With that, he walked briskly out of her office, and she heard the front door open and close. She grinned, knowing that Mrs. Markham would be in her office momentarily, and she was not disappointed. Seeing the older woman walking in with an arched eyebrow, she could not help but giggle. "Well," she said, "unless I'm mistaken, it looks like I'll be doing work for the town council." Shaking her head, Mrs. Markham replied,
"You'll find that doing business in a small town is very different from the large accounting firm you're used to. I know you've already figured that out from the clients that you've seen, but let me warn you that while the town council will want your expertise, you'll run into roadblocks at every turn when it comes to the mayor and the town's various department offices."
Grinning, she added,
"This will be interesting."
Her mind reeling, she realized that she had a lot of work to do to finish up several clients' files on her desk so that she could clear off her calendar to be able to work on the town's books. Thankfully, she had already hired another accountant to work with her, and he would be starting soon. She spent the rest of the afternoon in an epic battle between keeping her mind on her job and her thoughts off a date with Aiden. By the end of the day, she had finished her files, in spite of the fact that her thoughts of Aiden had won out more often than not.
Chapter 10.
Friday evening, Aiden pulled into the driveway of Leah's house. Glancing down at his attire, he hoped the blue dress shirt and khaki pants were suitable for their dinner. Earlier, standing at his closet, he realized how much of his life was spent in casual clothes, jeans and t-shirts for when he was at work,
and the same for when he was out having a good time. Other than his friends' weddings, it had been a while since he had needed to dress up. He walked briskly to the front door, barely knocking before the door was thrown open. Looking down, he grinned widely as Emily greeted him with a smile of her own.
"Mr. Aiden!"
He knelt down, opening his arms for a hug. She rushed into his embrace and he picked her up, stepping across the threshold. Leaning back so he could peer into her face, he asked,
"How was your day?"
She immediately began to tell him of all that had happened in her first grade class that day, and he grinned at her enthusiasm. A noise on the stairs sent his gaze upward, and he barely heard Emily say,
"Isn't Mama pretty?"
His voice raspy to his own ears, he said,
"Yes, she's beautiful."
Hearing a little giggle, he looked back at Emily and added,
"Just like you."
Emily clapped her hands, and he set her feet onto the floor, standing just in time to greet Leah as she approached him. Her makeup was heavier, but still subtle, and her thick hair fell in waves down her back. He watched as she nervously ran her hands over her dress. The little black dress's V-neck did not show cleavage, but fit snugly to showcase her breasts. It narrowed at the waist, then flared out in a full skirt over her hips and down to just above her knees. Paired with black, high-heeled sandals, she looked classy and delectable. As his eyes were roaming over her, they made their way back up to her face, and he realized she was doing the same to him. Hoping he measured up to her expectations, he waited nervously. She blinked, as though embarrassed to be caught gawking, and said, "You look really nice tonight."
"Nice?"
"Yes, nice," she laughed. "And handsome, but I'm sure you knew that." He stepped forward and placed his hand on her waist, while leaning over to kiss her forehead.
"With you, I'm never sure about anything, so it's nice to hear that I meet your approval."
Her shy smile warmed his heart, but before he had a chance to say anything else, he heard a noise from behind him.
"Susie!"
Emily called out her greeting. Turning, he spied a young teenager he knew walking into the house. She stooped to greet Emily before calling out her hello to Leah, then looked up at him and grinned.
"Hey, Coach McFarlane," she said.
He greeted Susie and watched as Leah got Emily settled before she walked back over to him, checking her small purse to make sure she had her phone. He took the black, lacy shawl from her arms and draped it around her shoulders. Calling out their goodbyes, he escorted her to his truck. He knew that she was nervous, considering this was her first date in years, but what he did not want to admit to her was that it was his first date in many years as well. As they chatted on the short drive to the Sunset restaurant, she commented that she had not been there yet, but had heard wonderful things about the food.
"The restaurant changed hands several years ago and was bought by a New York businessman. We weren't sure for a long time what he was going to do with it, and we were a little afraid he was going to just shut it down. But he's managed to run it well, and it brings in good business to the town."
"Is it awkward to be going to a rival establishment?" He shook his head.
"Not at all. This place has a lovely view of the sunsets over the bay, hence the name, and their menu is different than what we offer at the pub. Our closest competitor would be the Seafood Shack over by the harbor, but they still close down during the winter months when there are not as many visitors to Baytown. Even during the height of the season, though, there's plenty of business to go around."
After giving his explanation of the restaurant business in Baytown, he asked,
"What about the accounting business? When you were in Virginia Beach, was there competition among companies?"
She cocked her head to the side as she pondered his question and said,
"Not really. Like you, there was enough business to go around."
"What about in Baytown?"
She chuckled. "Well, you know, here I'm the only accountant in town now that Mr. Redding is retired, but I'm finding that I'm too busy, so I've hired another accountant to work with me."
Parking in front of the restaurant, she peeked out the windshield and exclaimed at the beautiful view of the bay.
"I made reservations and requested a window booth, so we should have a front row seat to the beautiful sunset tonight."
As they walked inside, he guided her with his hand on the small of her back. Such a tiny gesture, but with her he found it so intimate, loving the feel of her underneath his fingertips. Approaching the hostess counter, his heart stuttered as he observed a long-ago fling.
"Carlotta, fuck."
"Aiden, I haven't seen you in forever."
The woman strutted closer and threw her arms around his neck, offering a loud smacking kiss on his cheek, perilously close to his lips. He had to remove his hand from Leah's back to give a slight push to Carlotta in order to encourage her to move back a step. Keeping his tone even, he said, "We have a reservation." Carlotta's eyes widened as they jumped between him and Leah, and she gave him a knowing wink. "Sure, honey, just follow me." She grabbed two menus and began leading them toward the back of the restaurant where the booths facing the bay were. Placing his hand on Leah's back again, guiding her along, he felt the tension now radiating from her. Hoping to move past the awkward entrance into the restaurant, he gave a curt nod to Carlotta as he assisted Leah into the circular booth. Not giving her a chance to sit on the opposite side, he moved in next to her, forcing her to scoot over a little bit to make room for him. Carlotta smiled as she rattled off the evening's specials and winked at him again before she left, making her way back to the hostess counter. Swallowing hard, he decided to ignore the past few minutes and plunged ahead.
"What would you like to drink?"
"Just a glass of white wine," Leah said, keeping her eyes down, already studying the menu. As the waiter came by, he gave him their drink order, and they listened to the specials again. Once the waiter left their table, he decided to come clean, hoping to alleviate the embarrassing start to their dinner.
"I'm sorry about the hostess. She, is an old acquaintance."
"Yes, she seemed to be," her eyes moving to his. She offered him a tight-lipped smile that did not reach her eyes. After the waiter returned with their wine and they placed their orders, he directed her attention to the setting sun, enjoying the way she had to twist her body slightly into his to view it. Hoping to ease her tension, he reached his arm around her shoulder, his fingertips lightly moving over her soft skin, and breathed a little easier as he felt her muscles relax. As their meals were served, they began to chat again, and he felt as though the earlier tension had left. "Tell me about the American Legion and the ball teams," she said. Enthusiastic to have a conversation he was passionate about, he said,
"Historically, the American Legion was chartered in the early 1900s as a veterans organization. It started as a group for the veterans of the First World War, and has grown into one of the most influential nonprofit organizations in the United States."
Eyes wide, she continued to eat as she listened with rapt attention. He liked the fascinated look on her face, and was proud to have such a wealth of knowledge about the subject.
"When me and the other boys were in high school, we made a pact to all go into the military. It was our way to escape this tiny town and see the world. We had big dreams that we would go out and conquer."
He held her gaze as he sighed, adding,
"But what most of us discovered was that the other side of the world is just that. Another place. It wasn't where our hearts were. So we all came home after our various tours ended, all but one of us."
Her fork halted over her plate, and she stared into his face.
"Oh, Aiden, I'm so sorry."
"It was our friend Philip Bales. He was actually Caitlin's fiancé."
Leah was stunned into silence, clearly not having realized that Caitlin had suffered such a loss before finding love with Gareth and having their new baby. Giving a mental shake, he continued,
"But I didn't mean to make this conversation a downer. It's just that when we all came back, we realized that we wanted to be able to share our experiences that bound us together. There was an American Legion chapter in the northern part of the Eastern Shore that had almost died out. Mitch took the lead and managed to bring the chapter to Baytown.
I went to the auxiliary meeting the other day. It was interesting, and I've done the paperwork to become a member. But there's still so much I don't know," she said.
"There are lots of activities that the American Legion is involved in, but baseball is actually one of their most successful amateur athletic programs. Our goal is to educate young people about the importance of sportsmanship, citizenship, and fitness. We're also involved in supporting recovering wounded warriors and their families, and the auxiliary helps us with all those endeavors."
"Why is baseball so important?"
She cocked her head and added, "For you, I mean." He chewed silently for a moment, thinking of his response. Swallowing, he held her gaze and said,
"I guess it all comes down to my memories."
Seeing her rapt attention on him, he continued,
"I grew up in this little nowhere town in America. Friends, family, hell, the Baytown boys were my life. Once I was in Afghanistan, I realized how much I missed it. The fun, the camaraderie, the sense of belonging. I came back to that, but started to notice how many kids in this area don't have it."
She nodded, her gaze never leaving his.
"When I was growing up, I never realized how poor this county was. We were big in agriculture, but by the time I was an adult, a lot of that was gone.
Shrugging, he said,
I'm just hoping to give some of these kids a chance to have a little bit of what I had.
She reached over and touched his arm with her delicate fingers.
That's lovely, Aiden. Really lovely.
They finished their meals and pushed their plates back, both reveling in the nighttime sky over the bay and the good food and wine. His hand settled across her shoulder again, fingertips soothing her skin, and he asked,
Do you think that Emily would enjoy being part of the team?
She bit her lip, quiet for a moment, and he could see her thoughts churning behind her eyes.
Part of me wants her to feel normal and to do anything that she wants to do. The other part of me isn't sure how that would work.
Why don't you let me... Aiden?
A female voice sounded from the side, and he jerked his head around. A statuesque blonde in a skin-tight cocktail dress, leaving little to the imagination, stepped over to their booth. He did not know her name, but recognized her face as one of the vacation fucks he had had the previous year.
You have got to be kidding me, he thought,
once more feeling Leah's back straighten and her shoulders tense.
I was back in town for the weekend and wondered if I'd have a chance to see you again. We had such a memorable time the last time I was here.
Her voice slightly slurred, as though the effects of too many martinis had dulled her speech, as well as her good sense. Her behavior was rude, considering he was clearly on a date, and paired with his embarrassment over the whole thing, pushed him over the edge. Deciding that he was no longer going to play nice, he said firmly,
I'm sorry, but this is not the time for a reunion. As you can see, I'm with someone.
The blonde blinked, her eyes narrowing slightly as it appeared to dawn on her that he did not intend to welcome her with open arms.
Well, well, I never thought to see the leopard change his spots, but I guess anything is possible. But just so you know...
She leaned in a little and mock whispered, the alcohol on her breath hitting him in the face.
If you change your mind, I'll be here through the weekend, staying at the Baytown Hotel.
Batting her lashes, she turned and sashayed away. Closing his eyes at that horrible display, he sat with his arm still around Leah, feeling the negative vibes pouring off her. Letting out a sigh, he turned to her.
Leah, I'm sorry. I don't know what to...
Without looking at him, she scooted to the other side of the booth and stepped out quickly. Not lifting her eyes to his face, she said,
I think I'll skip dessert. I really need to get home and check on Emily.
Dropping some bills on the table, he hastened to follow her out, finding, even with his long stride, she was difficult to keep up with as she hurried out of the restaurant. Reaching his truck, he saw her standing facing the passenger door, still not looking into his face, even as she heard him approach.
Leah, please let me apologize. I never wanted our date to be interrupted like that.
Her shoulders slumped, and a sigh heaved from her body. Softly, she said,
I'm sure that's true, Aiden. It happened nonetheless. Please take me home. I really do need to check on Emily.
He felt sure that that was just an excuse, but could not come up with a plausible reason for her to give him more time. He unlocked her door and assisted her in, and as he rounded the truck to get to the driver's side, his mind was racked with frustration. The drive back to her house was short, and the silence in the cab of the truck was deafening. Walking her to the door, he reached out, placing his hand on her arm and halting her forward movement.
Please, Leah, hear me out. I wanted to be with you tonight, and no one else. You're the only person I've thought about since I met you, the only person I want to be with. But I can't change my past. Right now, though, I wish I could.
Turning to him, she lifted her eyes to his, the dark chocolate holding his steady. She nodded slowly and with a sad voice said,
I believe you, Aiden. And it isn't the women, though, to be honest, that was really uncomfortable.
He opened his mouth to speak, but she shook her head.
I know that I can't hold your past against you. That wouldn't be fair, and that's not what this is. But I think we're better off as just friends and nothing more.
His face fell, and the air left his lungs in a rush.
Why do you say that? I want you in my life, Leah, and I thought you felt the same way. I'd like a chance to show you how good we could be.
It's not just me. I have to think about Emily, too. She doesn't remember her father, and I haven't dated since Carl's death. To start something more than friendship with someone who...
She cut herself off, and he took a step back.
Who what? What were you going to say?
She took a deep breath, then said, "Who doesn't have a good history of commitment? That's a risk, and after tonight, I'm not willing to risk Emily's heart along with mine." She turned and placed her hand on the doorknob, then hesitated. Looking over her shoulder, she blinked away the moisture gathering in her eyes and said, "I'm sorry. Maybe I'm just a big chicken, but I just can't risk it." He stood for a moment on her front porch, hearing Emily's excited greeting through her door when she saw her mother. Stunned, he walked to his truck, his heart heavy. Driving back to his small apartment, he was filled with the knowledge that ever since meeting the enigmatic Leah, he had been drawn to her, even when he thought she was the complete opposite of what she turned out to be. Since learning who she really was, he had wanted something more than what he had ever wanted before. But after tonight, he had no idea how to show her he could be the man she deserved. Sitting on Emily's bed, Leah closed the storybook that they had just been reading. Bending over to tuck Emily in, she was surprised when her daughter looked up and asked,
"Mama, do you like Mr. Aiden?"
Blinking at the question, she reached down to tuck the covers tightly around her, thinking of the best answer. "Yes, I think he's a very nice man."
"Susie told me that he's a good coach and is really fun to be with."
"I'm sure he is fun to be with," she responded, then winced at the slightly sarcastic tone of her voice. Clearing her throat, she added, "I think he's probably a very good coach, and I think the kids enjoy being around him a lot." Emily was quiet for a moment as she shifted over in bed, tucking her hands up under her cheek. Her eyes lifted back up to her, and she said,
"I think maybe one day I'd like to play ball, too. I wasn't sure if I could, but I think Mr. Aiden would be able to teach me."
Smiling without saying a word, she leaned over and kissed Emily's cheek, turning out the light as she left her daughter's room. Moving across the hall to her own room, her thoughts were swirling. When she had entered her house after her date, she had considered what it would be like to live in Baytown and just be friends with Aiden as she had told him they could be, knowing it would hurt to see him with other women. She had wondered if it would be better to avoid him, but that idea seemed foolish. "He's a good man, and he might be really good for teaching Emily." As she crawled into bed, her mind continued to roll over the events of their date. Being honest with herself, she realized that there was nothing about his behavior that was untoward, and he appeared just as uncomfortable with the women who approached as she was. Grimacing at the thought of Carl's betrayal, she realized her own confidence had taken a hit when she and Emily were too much for him to handle. "So do I have it in me to be with a man whose past might always rear its ugly head? And what if we get to be too much for him? Would he bail as well?" As she fell asleep, she had no answer to those questions. Chapter 11. Aiden awoke the next morning no more rested than when he had fallen into bed the night before. Frustration still hummed through his blood, occasionally mixed with irritation and anger. Unable to separate his swirled thoughts, he climbed out of bed and dressed quickly. It only took 10 minutes to drive to the small house set behind the dunes of the Chesapeake Bay, a crushed oyster shell driveway leading from the road all the way to the old clapboard building. It was freshly painted, something that he and Brogan had finished the previous summer, and he admired the way it was holding up as he climbed out of his truck. Twisting his head, he watched the gentle surf as the early morning sun glistened on the water. This place was perfect. Taking a deep breath, he walked to the front door and knocked. Not a minute later, the door swung open and he greeted the occupant with a wide smile.
"Hey, Pops."
Finn looked up at him, his blue eyes twinkling in the early morning light, and shook his head slowly.
"Well, well, boy, you showing up here this early means either you didn't go to bed last night, or you got something on your mind that keeps you awake all night. Reckon you want to come on in and tell me which one it is."
He followed his grandfather into his small house, the familiar scent of pipe smoke settling in the air. Finn did not smoke a pipe often, but occasionally he enjoyed the tobacco. He always said his wife had loved the scent. He had been a widower for over 6 years and had moved to the small beach cottage after she passed away, saying that to stay in the house he shared with Mamie would have broken his heart. Aiden glanced around the small living room, furnished with a sofa and 2 chairs surrounding a coffee table, all facing Finn's pride and joy, his large flat-screen TV.
"A man needs something to watch his games on," his grandfather had proclaimed.
The scuffed hardwood floor gave the room character, and the only decorations on the walls were a few family photos.
"When a man's got a view of nature outside his window, he don't need fancy decorations in his house."
Shaking his head as he followed Pops into the kitchen, he grinned at the memories of the older man's simple life philosophies. The small kitchen would never have been large enough for his grandmother, who loved to cook for their huge family, but for Pops, it was the perfect size. He helped himself to a cup of strong coffee, throwing in a dash of milk, and they walked back out the door and settled into two Adirondack chairs facing the bay, the warm mugs in their hands. Sitting in silence for several minutes, they watched the sun rise higher into the sky. The gulls flew over the water, calling to each other and diving underneath the surface to come up with their breakfast. A flock of black pelicans flew by next, low over the water, as the tall seagrass surrounding Pop's small plot of land bent and waved in the breeze blowing from the bay. He knew that Pops was not going to ask him what was on his mind, rather allowing him to unburden as he needed. The problem was he had no idea where to begin. After shifting in his chair a moment, he finally caught Pops' eyes, and the older man said,
"If you don't know where to start, then just jump in, even if it's the middle. Once you start going, you'll figure out what you need to say."
Grinning, he knew his grandfather was right.
"I went on a date last night."
He waited to see what Pops was going to say, but nothing came forth, so he continued.
"A real date."
Pops turned his head and looked at him, saying,
"Boy, if that's your problem, then I don't think you've got it too bad."
Chuckling, he continued,
"It was a real date, Pops, with a woman that I really like." "I'm still not seeing the problem, boy. I'm getting from your tone of voice that the date didn't go so good."
Taking another sip of his now cooling coffee, he said,
"I took her to the Sunset Restaurant, where we ran into a couple of women I had, known in the past. Both made a point to not only speak with me, but implied about our previous relationship while ignoring that I was with someone. I shut them down quickly, but it was embarrassing nonetheless. We were having such a good time, but that put a real damper on the date. By the end, Leah just wanted to go home. She said it wasn't the women that bothered her, though I know that's not entirely true. She said what bothered her was that my past indicates I can't commit long term." "Leah, huh? A pretty new accountant in town. The one with the little girl you rescued?"
Pop sat quietly for another minute, then said,
"For you to be here this early in the morning, you must be serious about wanting to see her. She seems real nice, and so does her little girl. Might not be your typical type, Aiden, but people change, grow up." "Not going for my typical type anymore, Pops, you're right about that. At least not since I met her. But I don't know how to get her to trust me when my past says that I'm nothing more than a good-time guy." "Nothing wrong with a young, single man having a good time. In my day, we called it sowing our wild oats."
"I know, Pops. And I learned quickly that a casual hookup with someone that lived in town wasn't a smart move. Even if we said it was just for fun, it could be really awkward to run into that person again, or to have them develop expectations that I didn't share. That was the first thing that threw me last night. One of my casual, acquaintances was the hostess. She greeted me rather exuberantly, ignoring Leah in the process. I tried to politely move away, but I could tell it was uncomfortable for Leah."
Again, for a few minutes, they sat sipping their coffee, watching the fishing boats head out into the bay. Not usually one for rising early, he had to admit that when he did, it made him appreciate the water activity near Baytown even more. Finally, continuing, he said,
"I tend to meet up with women who are here on vacation or just passing through town. It's not hard to meet them, with the pub and all. But then, after Lee and I were finally having an enjoyable dinner, one of those types of women came up and remembered me. She essentially told me she was back in town and didn't mind a hookup, right there when I was having dinner with another woman."
Pop's eyebrows snapped down in a scowl, and he looked toward him.
"Now that just seems rude to me," he said. "I don't understand why any person would do that."
"I thought the same thing. I've never made it a secret to any woman I've hooked up with that it was nothing more than a couple hours of fun. I never promised to call, I never promised to see them again. At the time, I always made sure that they were on the same page that I was. A one-time thing, just for fun. And honest to God, with most of the women I'd been with, I figured they would be very decent if I ever ran into them again. Thought most would offer me a smile, but not say anything, even if I was alone. But fucking hell, Pops, two in one night, right in front of Leah. It was more than she could take. It was more than I could take.
Pops nodded his head slowly, finishing the last of his coffee, before setting his cup down on the wide arm of the Adirondack chair.
You came back different, boy.
Jerking at the sudden change of conversation, he asked,
Different? You were always a fun kid to be around. Brogan, he was the oldest and took his responsibilities very seriously. Caitlin, she was such a combination of tomboy and princess. But you loved life. You loved hanging out with your friends. You seemed to enjoy everything you did, whether it was fishing off the pier with me or hanging in the kitchen baking cookies with Mamie. I worried about you when you decided to follow Brogan and join the Marines. I was afraid that the Marines would take the fun spirit out of you, boy.
He sat in thought for a moment before responding.
Boot camp was hard, but I loved the camaraderie. Met some great guys and was proud of what we were doing.
He turned and looked at his grandfather's profile, seeing the deep wrinkles set in his face. His snow-white hair was thinning a bit on top, but his jaw was just as firm as it ever was, and his eyes just as sharp.
When Brogan came back, it was as though the devil was chasing his heels. I saw deep hurt in your brother, and my heart ached for him. I was glad when Ginny came into his life. They're good for each other.
Pop clasped his hands together, resting them on his stomach, as he continued to stare out over the bay.
When you came back, everyone saw the same fun-loving boy who had now grown into a fun-loving man. But not your family. We saw someone who was also running, but with a different devil chasing his heels.
He felt the muscle in his jaw tick as he ground his teeth together. He had no idea his family had seen what he did not understand himself. Swallowing deeply, he said,
Just learned over there that you gotta appreciate life while you have it. Came back and decided to enjoy it the best way I knew how at the time. Don't reckon that's a bad thing, son. But chasing women when you've got a devil at your heels ain't a good thing. I'm going to give you the same advice I gave your brother. You better do something about that so that you don't lose your chance at happiness. I hear them talking about the mental health group at our American Legion meetings. Wish I'd had some like that when I came back from Korea. I know your brother wouldn't be the man he is today if he hadn't started talking to someone. Now, you know, boy, you can always talk to me, just like we're doing here. But I can't swear to know how to get after that devil. But I reckon at the mental health group, they can help you. Just that easy, huh?
Finn's head jerked around toward him, his blue eyes flashing.
Boy, you didn't hear me say nothing about easy. Most things in life aren't going to be.
He dropped his chin, staring at his hands still wrapped around his coffee mug. He sat silent for a moment, and then nodded before lifting his head up to hold his grandfather's gaze.
You're right. I hadn't really thought about it in those terms, but I do have a devil nipping at my heels. And if I want to be the kind of man that I think Leah and Emily deserve, then I need to do something about myself.
Standing, they walked into the kitchen, rinsing their mugs out before placing them in the drying rack. Pops walked him to the door, and they embraced. His grandfather was not one to often give out hugs, but right then it was exactly what he needed. With a grin and a wink, he walked to his truck, pulling out his phone to make a call. Chapter 12. Leah walked along Beach Road, staring up at the large, red-brick, historic home that she had been told had been the location of the Sea Glass Inn for many years. Originally bought and used as a bed and breakfast by Tori's grandmother, it had been passed along to Tori, who continued to welcome guests to Baytown with a marvelous stay at her inn. The three-story home boasted a wide front porch with white columns and a red front door, the latter of which flung open before she even had a chance to ring the bell, and she was greeted by a smiling Tori waving her inside. Come on in. Stepping across the threshold, she greeted Tori with a hug before being led back past a massive living room on the left and a beautiful dining room on the right. Moving down the hall with its warm wooden floors, Tori led her into the kitchen. We're all outside, Tori said,
I had just come inside to gather another tray. "Can I help you?" she asked. "Absolutely. I never turn down any help." Tori laughed. After grabbing the tray filled with pastries, she followed Tori out the back door and onto a large stone patio where she saw the gathering of friends. Jillian, Caitlin, Jade, Belle, and Madeline all sat in comfortable lawn chairs. She and Tori joined them, the conversation lively as they sipped their tea and enjoyed Tori's munchies. It did not take long for their chat to move to the topic of children, and Caitlin asked about Emily. "How is Emily handling the move to Baytown?" She smiled, always loving to talk about her daughter. "She's done really well. She's making some friends, and," smiling at Jade, "she loves her teacher." Jade laughed and said, "She's an absolute delight to have in class." "I'm glad she's making friends," Belle said. "It's always so hard in school for anyone who feels the slightest bit different." She could tell by the wistful tone in Belle's voice that she must have faced some challenges when she was in school. Nodding, she agreed. "I used to worry about that so much, but she always seems to migrate toward other children who have such empathy. Even though she speaks well, I have a number of students who are in speech therapy, so she does not feel self-conscious about having that accommodation," Jade said. "And the other students in the classroom are very good about allowing her to see their face when they speak. Several of them are even learning some basic sign language just because they're interested." "And how are you handling the move to Baytown?" Jillian asked. "A little birdie told me that you and Aiden had a date the other night." Before she had a chance to think of a response, Caitlin added, "I'm so glad you took a chance on Aiden. I feel like my brother's been looking for someone special for years, but not having a clue where to look or how to find it." Madeline smiled and said, "Zach says that Aiden is one of the best volunteers he has with the fire department and emergency services. Anytime, day or night, when a call goes out, he knows he can count on Aiden to be right there helping." Unable to keep the surprise from her face, she stammered, I had no idea he did that. He never mentioned anything about that." Belle added, "Don't forget he also coaches for the AL ball teams." Looking around, she noted the other women's eyes pinned on her, their expressions ranging from amused to concern. "We had a nice time, but we just went to dinner. We're just, friends." "You know, I don't think everyone gives Aiden the chance he deserves," Caitlin said. "He can be such a Peter Pan sometimes, but I've often wondered if that's just because he has no idea how to find what he really wants." Jillian, her eyes pinned on her, agreed. "He was always the fun kid, and Brogan was always the serious one. But if any of us ever needed anything, Aiden was always the first one to volunteer." "I think all the boys came back a little changed," Caitlin said, drawing her attention back to her. "In different ways, some good and some not so good. Aiden went into the Marines as a fun-loving guy, but came back from Afghanistan almost desperately searching for the next good time." She lifted her shoulders in a little shrug and added, "He has such a capacity for love and loyalty. I know we all think of him as a big flirt, just out for some noncommittal fun, but I know when he finds the right person, he'll give everything he has to them. All the women before mean nothing to him, but it will take a very special woman to know what she has once he's given her his heart." Feeling the weight of Caitlin's gaze, she looked to the floor, letting her words sink in. Aiden must really be a wonderful man to inspire such loyalty from his sister. Loyalty. She thought about the conversations that she and Aiden had enjoyed. He had made it obvious that he had no interest in the women in the restaurant, keeping his fingers on her, pulling her close, staring into her eyes as she spoke. Sucking in her lips, she stayed lost in thought as the conversation around her moved in many directions. After her impromptu brunch with her new friends, she walked back down Beach Road on her way to her office. At the end of the road, she came to the Baytown Pier. As though having a will of their own, her feet took her toward the long wooden pier. Being fall, the beach was no longer filled with the shouts of children and harried parents loaded down with lawn chairs and umbrellas. Instead, there were several walkers along the shore, and as she looked straight ahead, she could see a few fishermen standing near the end of the pier, their lines tossed into the surf. Walking past them, she made it to the very end and propped her elbows on the wooden railing, rested her chin on her hands, and staring out into the Chesapeake Bay.
"Pretty sight, isn't it?"
Startling, she turned around, seeing Finn McFarland setting his bucket and tackle box nearby, and propping his fishing line against the railing. He stood and faced her, his snow-white hair partially hidden underneath an old faded ball cap, but his blue eyes were startling in their sharp gaze. She could not help but smile back at him and agree. Yes, it is.
It's a good place to let your mind go, or just to ponder over life.
Bending over, he popped open his tackle box and soon had his pole and line ready. With an efficient snap of his wrist, he sent the hooked line into the water before propping it against the railing. Unsure if she should speak while someone was fishing, she remained quiet. It did not take long, though, for Finn to fill the silence.
Always did like the fall. Don't mind the summer, but it's nice when the crowds are gone and the only people on the beach are the sea glass hunters. My wife used to search for sea glass all the time. She'd fill jars and jars and jars with it and set them around the house or give them to the grandchildren or the other kids who would come and play.
I've seen some of the sea glass art displayed at Jillian's Galleria, she said, but I had no idea that people just collected it.
My wife always said it reminded her to look for the best in people.
Her brow creased in uncertainty, and her head tilted slightly. I'm sorry? He shoved his hand into his pants pocket. Pulling his fist out, he opened his hand, palm up. She leaned over and spied a smooth, shiny, oddly shaped piece of green glass.
I guess it's just a habit, but every morning I stick a piece of sea glass in my pocket. I suppose it's my way of keeping my dear wife with me.
It's lovely, she said honestly, lifting her gaze up to his face, seeing a twinkle in his eyes.
You know where sea glass comes from, don't you?
The sea? He chuckled and nodded.
Well, that's partially right, but it first came from all those ships you see out there in the bay. They come from all over the world, and as they sit anchored right outside of Baytown, waiting to get permission to head on up to the Baltimore port, they often throw out their glass bottles and plates. The glass gets broken and churned in the surf, tossed by the waves and ground by the sand before it floats up on the shore. And this?
He shook his hand to draw her attention back to the green piece in his palm.
Is what's left for us to find.
Her eyes widened, and she smiled. It's kind of like the ocean has its own way of turning glass pollution into something beautiful, isn't it? Finn nodded, his smile spread across his face.
That's exactly right, Miss Smith. That's a perfect way to describe it. And of course, my dear wife always used to say sea glass is just like people.
Just like people? She asked, looking up to see him nodding emphatically.
We get tossed and turned by life. Sometimes the bad things that happen to us feel like they're grinding us up, turning us over, beating us down. We feel broken, and feel like we have nothing but jagged edges exposed.
She sucked in a quick breath as his words shot straight to her core. She loved her daughter, but hated the struggles she faced. Carl's inability to weather the storm, deciding to leave their family, had angered her, but had also left her feeling broken. Early on, she had often looked into the mirror and tried to find the confident young woman that she used to be. Sucking in her lips, she breathed through her nose, willing her spirit to calm. Finally, she admitted, "Yes, I know what you mean." His blue eyes appeared to soften as he stared back at her, his lips curving in a slight smile.
It's okay, you know. Most of us have felt that way at one time or another, but we don't have to stay jagged.
Unable to speak, she waited, silently willing for him to explain.
You see, my dear, all of those things that happen to us in life are simply polishing us so that when we finally come out of the storm, we're smooth and beautiful.
He turned and grabbed his pole, giving it a little jerk, and looked over the railing to check to see if he had caught anything yet. She leaned against the railing as well, both of them giving flight to their inner thoughts. She did feel beat down at times, that was true. But she knew that, over time, since Carl's death, she'd come out stronger. She was not broken. She didn't live her life that way. She was happy with Emily, and happy with her job. She just hoped she was showing her daughter how to be strong as well. She had spent so much time moving forward, making sure her and Emily were going to be okay, that she had not realized that her edges were smoothed out in the process. Interrupting her musings, Finn said,
I hope you can see my grandson Aiden as a piece of sea glass.
Blinking in surprise, she jerked her head around and stared at his wizened profile. He kept his eyes facing the water, but said,
"People often underestimate him when they first meet him. Sometimes I think that comes from being the younger son. And by the time he came back from the war, he seemed determined to not let people see any pain inside. But I look at Aiden and I see a man who may have been tossed and turned, but has come out a good man, with a kind heart. I know he's seen as someone who's not serious, but that's just not true. He's dedicated to his friends, his family, his job, and with the right woman, he'll be dedicated to her, too. There's no better man around."
Letting that sink in, neither spoke for a few minutes as they stood side by side, forearms resting on the wooden railing. Seeing his pole jerk, Finn grabbed it and began to reel in the fish. She had no idea what kind of fish it was, but it was certainly big enough that he was cackling about having caught his dinner. She laughed at his antics, and for a second could see an older version of Aiden. He unhooked the fish and placed it in his bucket before facing her again.
"Well, I reckon I ought to head home. Thanks for spending time with an old man."
Her smile came from deep inside, and she leaned forward, placing her hand on his arm. She moved in closer and kissed his rough cheek, saying simply, "Thank you." With a nod, he turned and picked up his pole, tackle box, and bucket.
"You should take time and find some sea glass."
Winking, he walked back down the pier, leaving her wondering if he was referring to the actual glass or Aiden. Chapter 13. That afternoon, Aiden sat in the counselor's office at the Eastern Shore Mental Health Group's clinic. He was stunned when, after confiding in Brogan that he was going to see a counselor today, his brother grabbed him in a bear hug, clapping him on the back. He could have sworn Brogan had tears in his eyes when he had proclaimed,
"Charles is the best, man. If not for him, I don't think Ginny and I would be together."
So now, here he was, sitting in the office, his eyes darting around. He noticed the seascape pictures on the wall and simple furnishings. Charles had a desk, but was sitting in front of it, facing him. It gave off a more casual vibe than talking to someone with a large desk in between them, making it feel almost like two friends having a chat. Glancing down, he noticed his leg was jiggling, his knee bouncing up and down. Lifting his gaze, he said,
"I guess I'm kind of nervous."
"That's not unusual," Charles said, leaning back in his chair. "I'm just here to listen to what you have to say. My job is not to tell you what to do or what to change about your behaviors or your emotions, but to listen, to see where you are and where you would like to be. Then we'll work out together how best to help you move forward in life."
"So you just want me to start talking?"
He chuckled, then winced, embarrassed to be laughing in the counseling office. Charles grinned widely and said,
"Don't worry about laughing. In here we can laugh, talk, cry, whatever you need. In fact, I have to say that laughter truly is some of the best medicine."
Feeling his breathing ease, he leaned back in his chair, gathering his thoughts.
"I was always a lighthearted kid. I liked to make people laugh. I even got a kick out of driving my parents crazy. If there was a dare, I did it. If there was a tree to climb, a fence to jump over, a bigger wave to ride, I did it."
Charles remained quiet, a slight smile on his face, and his hands clasped gently in his lap. His unassuming demeanor eased the way for him to continue to speak.
"My grades in high school were okay, but they were never going to be good enough for me to go straight into college. Me and the other Baytown boys were pretty good at football and baseball, but I was never going to be the talented athlete that was going to get a scholarship. Everybody always asks when you're younger, what do you want to be when you grow up? But honest to God, I never really had much of an idea. Dad worked in the cement factory, and my pops owned his pub. I suppose of the two, I felt like Pops had the cooler job."
"In the military?" He shook his head and said,
"I could lie and tell you that I had an overwhelming calling to go into the military. I could tell you that I was a flag-waving patriot who felt like it was my duty to go and serve."
Lifting his shoulders in a slight shrug, he looked up at Charles and confessed,
"But the truth of the matter is, my friends and I just talked about how much we wanted to escape this little town. We wanted to see the world. And we all made a pact that as soon as we finished high school, we'd join up. My brother Brogan joined the Marines, and when I graduated a year later, I followed suit."
"Did you find it hard to acclimate to the rigors of the Marines?" Chuckling, he replied,
Surprisingly, no. I guess that sort of shocked everyone. But I had always been really close to my friends and my brother, so it was not hard to transfer that loyalty to my fellow Marines. The tour in Afghanistan made me long for this little town, and when my tour of duty was up, all I wanted to do was come back home.
I think you'll find that for most servicemen and women, that's a very common emotion. He agreed.
Yeah, I've heard that from all my friends. Hell, I've even heard that from the older men who served in the military in prior wars, when they tell their stories at the American Legion meetings.
They were quiet for a moment. Then he added,
I never had anything really bad happen to me over there, though. I know some of my friends did. I know my brother Brogan did. But I'd feel like a real pussy if I acted like my time in Afghanistan was more horrible than anyone else's. I never lost a close friend. I was in some difficult situations, but didn't have an entire team wiped out. I mean, mostly we did what we were told to do, and everybody in my squad came home unscathed.
So, Charles prodded, what is it that has brought you here today? What is it about your life that you think might need to be changed?
Ever since I came back, it's been really important to me to make sure I'm living life to the fullest. Our grandfather deeded over Finn's pub to me, Brogan, and our sister, Caitlin. It's a job I like, and I take the business seriously. Caitlin's always been the brain, so she handles most of the finances. Brogan's always been the steady one, so he handles the personnel. And me? I serve drinks, laugh with the customers, and flirt with the ladies. Well, I used to flirt with the ladies, he corrected.
He cast his gaze upward, watching Charles's face, but observed nothing more than a professional interest. Glad that he did not see a derisive expression, he continued.
Shortly after I came back, I quickly learned that a fling with someone living in town was not a good idea. All I wanted was fun, and even though I thought we were on the same page, eventually someone would get clingy, so he shrugged. I found that the single women who vacation here made for the perfect one-nighter. I saw myself as just being young, unattached, and out to have fun.
If you're looking for censure over your sex life, I'm afraid you're not going to find it here, Charles said. But I get the feeling that there's more to it than you just wanting to have fun. He leaned back in his chair, his memories tumbling, and as usual, he tried to battle them back to the recesses.
It was actually my pops who told me that he felt like I was a very different person when I came back from the military. It's true. I wake up with an occasional nightmare sometimes, but I just figured we all do. I never associated anything that happened over there with my... Well, I've been called a Peter Pan by someone recently, implying that I didn't want to grow up and just wanted to have fun. I guess that really stuck with me and got me thinking.
Do you see yourself as a Peter Pan? Scrunching his face as he pondered the question, he said,
Not really. I just never found anyone I really wanted to grow up for. I guess that sounds stupid, but as long as I was just having fun with the ladies, I didn't think my behavior mattered.
And now you've met someone, Charles stated. His lips curved into a smile as he thought about Leah and Emily.
Yeah, I have. But she knows of my reputation and is naturally concerned about being with someone that she sees might not be serious. And for the first time, my previous behavior really stings.
Stings?
Yeah, what if everybody's right about me?
Charles nodded, then asked, Let's talk about the nightmares. Are you ready to talk about what happened over there? His voice low, he said,
I've never told anyone, because it didn't really happen to me. I was just a witness.
They sat in silence for just a moment before he added,
But yeah, it's time I faced the connection between what happened there and who I am now.
Clearing his throat, he began,
I was with my squad, and we were doing what was supposed to be a routine check on a village. We'd heard that there were insurgents nearby, but we were escorting some Red Cross volunteers to check on a village where illness had swept through. We entered the village. All was normal. They did what they needed to do, and then we were escorting them back to base. Not difficult, no problems. It was then that we came across a freak accident. Another squad's truck had hit a landmine, and it had been blown to the side. Amazingly, everyone seemed okay, except the driver. I happened to get to him first and could tell it was bad.
Closing his eyes, he could see the events playing out in his mind, as though watching a movie.
I wasn't a medic, so I backed away, giving our medic and the Red Cross volunteers a chance to get to him. We called for a medevac, but knew it was going to take about 20 minutes for them to arrive. Our medic told me to stay up by the guy's head, keep him calm, and just talk. I guess he knew me well enough. He figured the one thing I could do in any situation was talk.
so I moved up next to his head and stayed close.
He opened his eyes and looked at Charles, his breathing heavy, and realized it had been a long time since he had faced the events of that day and remembered them clearly.
"What did you talk about?" Charles asked.
Shrugging, he said,
"Just shot the shit, you know. Sports, girls, what we wanted to do when we got out."
"Tell me about that. Tell me about your conversation."
He chewed on his lip for a moment, the memories slowly coming back to him.
"I found out he came from Cincinnati, so we talked baseball for a few minutes. Said he loved to go to the Reds games. I told him I played in high school, but wasn't all that great. He tried to laugh through his pain and confessed that he wasn't either. He told me he didn't have a girl to go home to, and I told him he was a lucky fuck to be able to go home and play the field. He grinned, but I could tell it hurt. We talked about some of the shit we wanted to do when we got home. Hit the bars with our friends and go drinking, pick up girls, and run through as many as we could before we ever decided to settle down. Eat what we wanted, drink what we wanted, fuck who we wanted."
Charles made no comment, but as he listened to himself, he shook his head in derision.
"Jesus, listen to myself right now, what a bunch of stupid shit he and I talked about."
Did it seem to take his mind off his injury? Did it seem to take his mind off the fact that it sounds like he was dying? Charles's questions had him sucking in his breath quickly, his eyes darting to the counselor's. Letting out a long sigh, he nodded.
"Yeah, he was dying. I didn't realize it at first, just thinking that the medics were working to save his life. But after about 10 minutes, I realized they were just trying to keep him out of pain."
He blew his breath out in another long sigh, suddenly feeling tired, as though he had run a long race.
"I think our conversation made him feel better," he said. "Honest to God, if I had known he was dying, I probably could have thought of something a hell of a lot more profound to talk about."
"I don't know. I think it sounds like what you and he had was a normal conversation between two men stuck together in time. As you say, just shooting the shit. Maybe the kind of conversation that you would have had if you had been stuck on a plane together, or waiting in a long line for something. What you gave him, Aiden, was a few minutes of normal in a very abnormal time. What you gave him was actually very precious."
Suddenly, tears stung the back of his eyes, and he looked down at his hands and blinked furiously to keep them at bay. Unsuccessful, one dropped from his cheek and landed on his jeans. Without looking up, he accepted the proffered tissue that Charles held out. After a moment, he pulled himself together and looked up, the stain of blush heating his cheeks. Charles threw up his hand and said, "Before you apologize, don't. It's actually very important that you remembered and faced the traumatic incident from when you were in the Marines." After another moment of silence, Charles asked, "How did things end with him?" He inhaled deeply before letting out a long, slow breath.
"I heard the sound of the medevac coming and knew they would be there in a moment. I bent closer so that he could hear me and told him he'd be going home soon. He looked up at me, held my gaze, and asked me to promise that when I got home, I'd do all the things that we talked about doing. And then he took his last breath just as a helicopter landed."
"I'm very sorry that happened."
Silence filled the room, and he appreciated the time of quiet reflection that Charles was giving him. Blowing out another breath, he allowed himself to remember the young Marine. "How did that experience parlay into your attitude when you returned home?"
"I swear this makes me sound like a prick," he replied, "but I just felt lucky. That experience stayed with me for a while, but it slowly eased from my mind, and by the time I came home, I was just glad to be home in one piece. I don't remember consciously making the decision, and yet from the moment I got back to Baytown, I just wanted to do all the things he and I talked about doing. I felt lucky to be back home, in a place that I loved. I felt lucky to be back with my family. I felt lucky to be young and single and free, so I spent a lot of time drinking and fucking, figuring that was what I was supposed to do. I mean, it's not that I didn't enjoy it, don't get me wrong. It wasn't pressure or anything. I just think I put myself in a box and didn't stop to question if that box still fit, if it ever really did in the first place."
Charles leaned forward in his seat, his forearms now resting on his knees as he held his gaze. "If you had felt overwhelming guilt instead of luck, I would think that would not be very healthy. I think deciding to live your life fully is a much healthier choice," he emphasized. "Do you feel that you have been living life to the fullest?" His brows snapped down, and he shook his head slightly.
"Well, I thought so, or I used to think so, at least until recently."
How do you view your lifestyle now? Shaking his head, he said,
I now look back, and it all seems like I was just running away. That all those meaningless flings were nothing more than immediate sexual gratification, but they weren't making me happy. Not really, not for long.
Meaningless can keep you from feeling. No feelings keep you from being involved, and not being involved keeps you from feeling hurt when the ending is not what you'd hoped it would be or what you feel it should have been. Eyes wide, he nodded.
Exactly. I'd never considered that, but that's exactly what I've been doing. I haven't wanted to risk feeling so out of control again.
He chuckled.
Ironic, right? Most people would probably say my moving from one girl to the next is pretty out of control.
You know, Aiden, a lot of people seek counseling because their feelings are rather jumbled up inside of them. For many, they need a lot of help detangling those feelings. But I think you have the solutions inside yourself, you just hadn't verbalized them. You suffered a life-altering event while in the Marines, but I think that event is one of the reasons you decided to come back to your hometown, work with your family in a business that you enjoy, and spend time with your family and friends. Part of living life to the fullest has been becoming involved in the American Legion,